RadioInfluence.com.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
With the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here. The con man is behind the glass, keeping us on track. And we're your weekly source for performance information. If you want to get in touch with us, do so. CrushPerformance.com is the website with your questions, comments, or smart remarks. Or listen, if you have a topic or an idea you'd like us to investigate, let us know. We may dedicate a segment or an entire episode to your idea. We've done it in the past. We'll surely do it again. And if nothing else, we answer every single message we get. On Twitter, follow us at Jeff Crush. And on the social media platforms of Facebook, Instagram, and on YouTube, search Crush Performance and you can find us there. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking baseball. As we are just past the midseason mark of the Major League Baseball season with the Midsummer Classic right around the corner coming up in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, July 17th, it's a big time for the season. I love the midseason mark. We can reflect back on the first half, we can project into the second half, and we can see how we've done in terms of our early season predictions and our teams to follow and players to follow, and we're doing pretty damn good there, by the way. My teams and my players to follow this year are pretty much right where they want them to be. No really big surprises like we've seen in the past, Cleveland Indians. But if we go back to the offseason, if you recall, there was some unrest between the Players Association and the owners group in terms of spending, the movement of free agencies, the lack of player signings. It was a real time of unrest. It sort of died out, thank goodness, as the season started. There hasn't been a lot of animosity to this point. I'm wondering if it wasn't just some posturing with the CBA slowly creeping towards its due date. It could have been a little politicking, maybe some warning shots across the bow from both sides as the CBA sort of runs down and we get closer to its due date. But I think there were some real issues this offseason, and legitimately so. If you look at how free agency rolled out, the amount of money teams were spending, the big teams, the typical big spenders, the Yankees and the Dodgers pulling back on their spending, teams like the Giants stepping up and spending a little. It was really interesting to see the quality and the number of free agents still available at the start of the season. Some didn't sign till midway through the first half, and there's some great ones still unsigned, which could make for a very, very interesting second half as teams strategically make moves, add players to their rosters to make charges for the postseason, especially in the National League. But a lot of the fervor revolved around the 2018-2019 free agent bonanza that is supposedly on its way in Major League Baseball with gigantic names like Stanton, Harper, Machado, Yu Darvish, Clayton Kershaw, J.D. Martinez, and more others, Matt Harvey, McCutcheon, and more. There is many more that are going to be available, but they're predicting this free agent period to be one of the most lucrative in the history of perhaps all of sport. So we watch with great interest. And part of the thinking that last offseason where teams were sort of holding back on their spending, filling their coffers for this gigantic free agent period that's coming up, we'll watch that with great interest. And there's a lot of things to keep your eye on. I mean, just look at the standings. A very, very bizarre year in Major League Baseball. The Baltimore Orioles, unfortunately, were one of the top stories of the first half, and not for the good. That's kind of what we were referring to when we talk about not all things were good in Major League Baseball. Is it time to look at parity strategies in this game? I mean, we've talked about this in the past. We know that a lot of the executives in the game don't really think it's a big deal. But for 13 of the 30 teams and their fans, listen, the dog days of summer have already arrived. Not good for the game. Baltimore was at a point where they had lost 50 games, I think, before they won 20 this year. Not good for the Baltimore fans. And if we look across the board, there are a number of teams that are way, way back. Kansas City, 24, 25 games back. Texas Rangers are 21 games back. You know, the American League, it's pretty much set. The playoffs are set in the American League. We know Boston Yankees are there, and the Yankees are all of that. We'll get to that in a minute, but man, they are as scary as we thought they were going to be. I'm actually very surprised Boston is hanging on the way they are, but the American League East is traditionally exactly what we thought. It's tough. Boston and Yankees leading the way. Cleveland, my sort of nemesis, because I didn't see them coming a couple years ago when they entered the playoffs and just really swept baseball off their feet. Great, great story. They're as strong as they ever were, and they lead that division. They've got that one clinched up, as a matter of fact, at the All-Star break. Minnesota could make a charge, but I don't think so. Detroit, the White Sox, and Kansas City are out of the playoffs. In the AL West, the defending World Series champions, the Houston Astros, are doing exactly what they should be doing, leading that division. Right behind them, though, Seattle. And Seattle's a great story as well. One of our teams to watch this year, because we know they made some very, very interesting changes in how they manage their pitchers. They also really committed some payroll to their lineup. And losing Robinson Cano because of a PED violation early in the season. Listen, I was watching this story with great, great interest because I wanted to see the power of the player, a single player. Baseball is so different than other sports. You know, you can look at basketball, you can add one incredible player, it could change the outcome of a team. If you have the right quarterback or the right receiver in football, you can change a team. We've seen it in hockey. You could talk about Connor McDavid, even though that team really hasn't turned it around. Sidney Crosby, Wayne Gretzky, there's so many players that can influence the performance of a team. In baseball, could it be that one player has a massive impact on a team's ability to push for the playoffs in the postseason? Well, Robinson Cano was that story, and Seattle has just moved along like it didn't even happen. A fantastic story in baseball. When they get him back, does it add to what they're able to do? Well, listen, that's one of the better divisions in the American League right now, because you have Houston, Seattle, and Oakland right there, sort of pushing the envelope to make a charge for the postseason. That's going to be fun to watch in the second half. The standings in the National League, however, that's the place to focus, because there's so many great races here. Not as many teams out of it in the AL East. Atlanta Braves, a very, very pleasant surprise. One of my teams to watch this year, as Alex Anthopoulos takes over after that fiasco this offseason. The firing and banning from baseball of the previous GM. Alex walking into that mess with them having to give back a bunch of players they signed. Boy, oh boy, they've really, really done a great job. The Phillies finally making some noise in the AL East. Washington Nationals, 5.5 back, they're going to battle. The Mets and Miami are out. Now, pleasant surprise right now, Milwaukee. And they are one of the teams to watch, are a crush teams to watch this year because of their commitment to payroll. They're doing a really good job. Interesting to watch. You know, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh being one of the teams the Players Association was sort of attacking for not really spending and getting their payroll up to where it could be. But their argument was they've been spending the allocated proper amount of money, just not on players. They've been doing things like player development, coaching. They've been investing in player development, not necessarily paying players to play. Now, listen, in all of baseball, if there's a division to watch, it's the National League West. Arizona is off the charts, doing something, again, took me by surprise a little bit. They were ahead of schedule last year. They're way ahead of schedule this year. The Dodgers got off to a poor start. They're making a push here in the midseason. They're going to be a force to be reckoned with. But the San Francisco Giants, they have the biggest payroll in all of baseball. They're making a push, trying to redeem themselves after last year's catastrophe. I don't think we've ever seen a high-performance team or a professional team drop off the cliff like the Giants did last year. Well, they're right in the thick of it now, and I think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with, because rumors having it they're going to be making some moves for the second half. A few injuries have really set them back, but they're three games back and they're hanging on. And the Colorado Rockies, a very, very pleasant surprise. So while there's a lot of great races going on in baseball, and there's a lot of great stories, man, I think the parity is really, really concerning me. It's one of my big concerns as we see teams, you know, 12 games, 14 games, 15 games back. But in the National League, you know, boy, Texas, 21 games back. Kansas City, 24. Baltimore, 38.5 games back, 38 and a half games back at the All-Star break. Just crazy stuff, and I just don't think we can see that. I mean, you look at the NFL, we don't see that in the NFL. When the NFL camps open, would it be safe to say that there's legitimate hope for almost every single team in that league? We don't have that in baseball. Baseball needs that, and they better get back to it. All that said, there's been some pretty cool storylines in Major League Baseball in the first half, and a couple of them happened within the last week. All right, let's go back to, I'm just calling it Wacky Wednesday, July 11th. A lot of crazy things happened on July 11th, Wacky Wednesday. If we look at the Yankees, okay, they are everything I feared they would be. The true triple threat. Starting rotation, pretty damn good bullpen, and their offense has been, well, it's been scary as hell. And on Wacky Wednesday in Major League Baseball, the Yankees made Major League history. Greg Bird hit a grand slam for home run 152, breaking the historic record of the most home runs in the first half in Major League Baseball history. That is a major feat, but the Yankees weren't done. Tyler Wade hits his first career home run in the sixth, and then Romaine hits another in the seventh, making the grand total of 154. That's the most first-half home runs in Major League history. The Yankees. If they keep up this pace, they will break the season record of 264, which was set by the Seattle Mariners in 1997. If they keep this up, they're on pace to hit 272 home runs, which is unbelievable in Major League Baseball. We'll see, because we know what's happening in the game. Strikeouts and the long ball. And to that point, back to Wacky Wednesday. On July 11th, there were 38 home runs in Major League Baseball. Two teams with 10 home runs or more. And there were also three teams that used position players on the mound. And if you want to talk about lopsided, the Diamondbacks were down 15-1 in the fourth, and the Reds were down 19-4. After four innings, such lopsidedness, a very rare occasion, a historical occasion for Major League Baseball, that Wednesday, July 11th, was truly wacky. And it's also why we love this game so much. Heck, why we love sports so much. It's just incredibly unpredictable, this real life reality TV that is sports. Just love it. Hey, we got to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, listen, a very important conversation. There is a new way of thinking in terms of injury management and recovery, and it does not include icing. We're going to look into the thinking of one of the very first ice-free training rooms in high-performance sport right after this on Crush Performance. Stick around, everybody. I've done a couple presentations recently, one of the latest to an urban sport council. It was a 90-minute presentation that turned into an incredible 3-hour performance extravaganza. So much fun. And then I was asked to speak to the staff and employees of a construction company. What does a sport performance guy have to say to a construction company, you ask? Well, plenty. See, the strategies we use for improving performance in sport are virtually the same as the ones we use anywhere you're trying to perform or work towards a goal or outcome. If you want you or your organization to be successful, you need to make sure you have the best performance environment possible. And there are performance factors you can influence to improve productivity, on-the-job performance, and maybe most important of all, reduce the risk of injury. This is what I love to talk about. Everything you need to know so you, your team, franchise, business, or organization can operate at the highest level possible. I've been lucky to speak in many parts of the world, to sporting organizations, bankers, oil companies, sales teams, municipalities, schools, and now a construction company, all in the name of helping people to understand what it takes to perform at their very best. Right now, we're currently booking Crush Performance summer and fall presentations. If you'd like us to come out and present to your group, please write to us at info@crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com.
And welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Hey, listen, if you do want to get in touch with us, any questions, comments, or smart remarks, or if you have a question or a topic you'd like us to investigate, let us know. We just may do that. And we may dedicate a segment or an entire episode to your idea. We've done it in the past. We certainly will do it again, and we'd love to hear from you. CrushPerformance.com is the website. Follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush, and on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, just search Crush Performance and we'll hook you up there for sure. Today we are talking baseball as we're just past the midseason mark of the Major League Baseball season. And I'd have to say that one of the top stories coming out of baseball over the last couple of years has been the injuries and the injury rates that we've seen skyrocket across the board from the developmental levels to the minor league levels right up to the pros. Mostly concerning Tommy John and the elbow. We're seeing sort of a decline in the number of shoulder injuries, which is great news. And we're not seeing the incline that we've seen in terms of elbow injuries in the last few years, which is a great trend. But there's also now new strategies in how we deal with the injuries we're seeing in baseball and sports across the board. It's incredibly important to be assessed properly, to deal with an injury accordingly in the right way as soon as possible. It's very, very important to have a strategic and well-thought-out rehabilitation plan. And then, of course, return to play, getting the athletes back so hopefully they don't experience any future problems. That's the key. But there's been a massive shift in one area of injury management that I think is taking a lot of people by surprise, and that's the movement away from icing. It's something that's sort of just been traditional in sport, but we're getting away from it, and it's a conversation that I want to get into a little bit more here today as we talk with Brandon Aiken, the Assistant Athletic Director for Sports Medicine at the University of South Carolina. Brandon, thanks for coming on the show. It's great to have you here today.
Hey, nice to be here with you, and it's University of South Carolina, Aiken.
Aiken. Well, hey, so I wanted to ask this. Okay, let's get that on. So your last name is Aiken. You're in Aiken. I want to know, is this like a family town? You guys like are the family landlords there, or how does that work?
No, just a happy coincidence.
Great stuff. Good. Well, hey, thanks for joining us today. I'm really looking forward to this discussion as we sort of hit the midpoint mark of the Major League Baseball season. You and I both know that in professional baseball, one of the big issues over the last 5 to 10 years even has been the massive increase of injuries, especially when we look at elbows and shoulders. And it's my contention, Brandon, that a lot of these injuries are happening long before any of these players even sign their first pro contract. It has a lot to do with the developmental model that we now have for our young athletes and maybe how we're handling our athletes in terms of recovery, recuperation, and even training in general. You guys have taken an unbelievable twist there at the University of South Carolina, Aiken, and I wanted to talk to you about this. It's the ice-free training room. We had Gary Reinel on a few months ago talking about the ice age, the meltdown, and it stirred up quite a conversation because I think that people have just sort of started relying on ice. You guys have moved away. So I guess, Brandon, let's start the conversation with this. What was the inspiration to move in the direction of getting away from ice because it's been such a big, big part of sport for so long?
Well, yeah. That's basically, you know, it kind of started out as, you know, I love my job, and my job is to return athletes as quickly and safely as possible. You know, and in that time, you get to have some good relationships with athletes and things like that. But it became somewhat of an issue from time to time where it was kind of a running joke. You know, like, oh, I broke my leg. Just put some ice on it. You know, that was always the answer. Just put ice on it. Just put ice on it. And that kind of, you know, bothered me a little bit because, you know, I'm thinking maybe we can do more and things of that nature. You know, I went to school. Graduated, became a certified athletic trainer, and that was, you know, kind of the thing to do with injuries. You definitely put ice on it, you know, ice compression, all that, you know, the whole rice scenario. And I don't know, at one point I just, you know, I had baseball players coming in all the time, let me ice my elbow, I got to ice my shoulder, you know, those kind of things. And it got to the point where I was like, this is kind of crazy. And, you know, I also have a strength and conditioning background. So, you know, the question was, well, are you hurting? Well, no, I just threw a bullpen. You know, I need to ice my arm. I'm like, you know, that didn't click with me anymore because, you know, in the strength and conditioning realm, when we lift, you know, yeah, you're creating muscle damage, things like that, but you need that in order to recover and get stronger and get better. So, you know, it's like, all right, this just doesn't make any sense anymore. So we just stopped icing our arms that didn't hurt, you know, like, the athlete would throw, and then we'd, you know, we wouldn't ice. We'd do something like active recovery or milking or something like that to kind of help facilitate that that whole healing process, or that recovery process. And then one day I decided, you know what, we're just going to stop. You know, and it actually, you mentioned Gary. I saw a video with he and Kelly talking about that issue, and it just clicked. It's like, you know, it was one of those moments where It was kind of an aha thing, and it really kind of gave me the courage hearing them talk and having somebody out there that kind of felt the same way I did. And I was honestly afraid to make that move and you know, go over that mountain because I didn't know what was going to happen. I was, like I said, always brought up icing everything and that kind of thing. But at the same time, I was kind of fairly certain about, you know, my background as far as physiology and those kind of things that, you know, yeah, we're probably on the right track. It makes sense, you know. So we had a soccer player that sprained his ankle pretty significantly and said, okay, this is it. Here's our door. We're going to walk through it and see what happens. And sure enough, I mean, you know, with what we were doing, we got some excellent results to the point where, you know, the athlete was, you know, almost in disbelief about how good he felt, how soon he felt good. So from that point, we just kind of kept moving forward. And then it snowballed. And the more positive results I saw, the more my convictions grew as far as we're doing the right thing.
Yeah, no, and it sounds so right. When you get back down to the fundamentals of how the human body works, it just seems right. And I think we get away from the fundamentals, Brendan. We're talking with Brendan Aiken, the Assistant Athletic Director of Sports Medicine at the University of South Carolina, Aiken. Don't you agree with that statement? I think everybody's sort of gotten to the point now where we're looking for shortcuts or we're starting too far down the line and we're just sort of, I think, negating some of just the classic fundamentals that make the body, the human body, work.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You know, we're trying to short circuit the immune system. We're trying to speed up the process, but we're not doing it with respect to how the body works. And that's what we take into account here is, look, it is a well-orchestrated cascade of events that takes place in order to heal from an injury or recover from athletic performance. So if we mess with that it just it doesn't work out well. You know, we've got in the past, you know, I think one of the problems we had was by short-circuiting that that immune response and kind of trying to manipulate it and micromanage it, we've really done a disservice to, you know, ourselves and our athletes and things like that. Because, you know, what we're seeing or what we used to see, at least from my perspective, is we used to see, you know, kind of the chronic conditions. Yeah, they were back playing and things like that, but they were still hurting or still sore, things like that, you know. But now we've created a situation where we get resolution, You know, we don't have that, my ankle's still sore or my shoulder's still sore. We usually get the, I feel better than I ever have. That's what I hear more often than anything else.
Well, and I get that too. You know, one of the things, oh boy, and this goes back years, this might age me a little bit, but years, you know, and I know, Brandon, you've seen this probably firsthand as well. You get to the doctors and, you know, just bless the doctors for what they do. There's so much they need to know and deal with. It's impossible to know it all. Right. But this whole concept of shut it down, don't move, inactivity for a period and then start the rehab process, it absolutely never made sense to me at all. And now we're away from that. And this this movement away from icing, which has just been such a traditional part of injury management, recovery processes, and the culture of sport, this is another big step forward, uncomfortable for a lot of people. But we've come a long ways from the days of just shutting it down and resting to active recovery and really, really being proactive in the recovery process and also prevention as well.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, I mean, you know, we're getting to the point where, you know, here's the issue, I think. It takes a little more work. You know, I've got to be a little more engaged with my athletes. They've got to be a little more engaged than just sitting in front of a TV and putting ice and E-stim on it. You know, there's things that we do now that yeah, it's a little more time consuming, but here's the thing is we're shortening that whole amount of time that we're out of action because we're doing the active recovery. We're actually, you know, doing things to facilitate healing. We're, you know, increasing that blood flow. We're, you know, facilitating lymphatic flow. So we're nurturing that healing process. We're helping the body do what it's supposed to do. You know, everybody drives everywhere. You know, we spend more time sitting on our butts than we do, you know, walking around. And I think that's part of the issue is getting everybody kind of active and moving again and realizing that's how we're supposed to be.
Yeah, you know? I like it. I really do like it. And you mentioned something I think really important there, that investment of time. You know, one of the issues when we first started moving away from ice are the athletes who had been icing forever. Would there be a psychological effect where these guys are going, man, I'm not using ice? I mean, that is a real phenomenon that we have to address. But also, investing this time can have a psychological benefit that guys are being proactive in their injury prevention or management and also their return to play. So there's a real interesting consideration there as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there was, we had an athlete recently, this past season who, you know, he came in as a freshman and he was one of those kids that, you know, parents told him, coaches told him, ice that shoulder when you get done throwing, that kind of thing. So, you know, when he found out about our policy, of, no ice, I think he was a little nervous about that because it took him out of his routine. And that's all it was. It was a routine. I mean, beneficially, I mean, did it serve him? No. If anything, it probably held him back a little bit. But we kind of found out because he was a closet icer, so there was a couple times where he actually came out and saw him.
The closet icer, yeah.
Right.
Oh, man.
So we introduced him to active recovery and things of that nature. We used the Mark Pro a lot. I love that thing because it really helps us do what we want to do as far as you know, getting the blood flowing, the lymphatic flows, and helping that muscle recover. But once we got him on that, I mean, it became eye opening for him because, you know, and we had other athletes on the team telling him, hey, you need to do this, you need to do that. But, you know, until he actually, you know, experienced it and saw the benefits, you know, he just had no idea. And you know, I think he made the comment that I wish I'd been doing this, you know, my whole career.
Right.
Because it made a difference for him. I mean, he would go throw a bullpen. Normally he'd be sore the next day. And we talked to him that day, or it was like, I think maybe 4 days into using it. And he was like, I feel better than I ever have, you know?
Yeah.
And it carries forward. And, you know, I think the problem we run into here now is we don't have enough to go around. But there are other things that we do, you know, I mean, there's other forms of that active recovery that we can utilize as well. But, you know, getting past that and educating the athlete on why that was our biggest thing is getting, you know, the education down to those athletes, that are interested in, you know, I mean, the coaches are a little more hesitant because they're just, you know, that's how they were brought up.
So, yeah.
I find our younger athletes they get it. They get it. They're like, oh, you know what? That makes sense. You know? So that's not a real hard fight for us. And especially when they feel and see the results of it. So they get it now, you know? And, you know, we go all the way with it. So athletes going in for surgery, there's no ice for you. You know, I mean, we don't need it. We're a lot, you know, you've basically done damage to your body. We're allowing that muscle or that joint, that ligament to heal up as it should because your body knows what to do.
Right.
So we don't need to do anything except help it do what it's supposed to do.
Oh, Brandon, and those are great words. And then, you know, you brought on a couple questions there for me. Like, to see an organizational shift away from using ice here in the sporting world and the high performance world. Listen, hey, you guys are right on the doorstep of the professionals at the college level. And it's really important to make sure that the athletes are ready to go on a daily basis. But to have an organizational shift, you have the administration that are in charge of running that entire athletic system. You have the team doctors, you have the athletes and the coaches. Everybody has to get on board here. Maybe tell us quickly about that adventure of making this big shift, because it is not the norm in sport right now. I believe it will be, and I believe you guys are leading the way, Brandon, but it's certainly you're breaking ground here.
Yeah. Well, I hope so, because, you know, and again, I'm trying to get all my colleagues on board too, and it's a slow process,
yeah.
You know, because that institutional minutia is just, it's so hard to go against. You know, my administrator, my AD, kids me all the time about using ice and things like that. But, you know, I think, you know, having good rapport with the coaches and the administrators definitely helps. And being able to explain in layman or scientific terms about what we're trying to achieve and why we're trying to do it and why the old way just wasn't right, that helps. You know, I got a lot of my coaches trust me, I think, a lot. And there's a few that are still kind of resistant. And it actually, and you know, it was just this past, I think, year where I got, you know, the other one to really understand. Because, you know, they're more concerned with the X's and O's things. But, you know, when they get feedback from an athlete or see the athlete performing really well and not using that ice, and it that's when it starts to click for them, you know, because a lot of them are former athletes as well. So they have that icing background for injuries.
Right.
But being able to explain it and set policies and have an administrative staff that supports what you're doing and believes in what you're doing is a big deal. You know, so, but, you know, if I can explain the science, if I can explain, you know, why we're doing what we're doing, that makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure does. We're talking with Brendan Akin, the Assistant Athletic Director of Sports Medicine for the University of South Carolina, Akin. Well, that is a massive shift for sure. But when you have, you know, some people like the founder of the Rice Principle retracting that, because we now have a thorough understanding of the physiology of injury and injury recovery, that's a pretty powerful thing. There's a lot of really strong personalities in the sporting world now moving towards this, and the science is there, Brendan. That's the thing. It really makes sense when you understand how the body works, and the fact that ice is actually slowing the recovery process. That's, right. I think, the big message to send.
Right, right. I mean, and there's been, you know, I was actually just, there's a study I was just looking over the other day that was done a while back, but it clearly shows that there is at least a day delay in the healing process. And that's, here's the issue with that is that there's a cascade of events that need to take place in order for the body to heal and heal correctly. So if we interrupt one of those processes, we can't move on to the next one. And if we interrupt that process, we don't know what the true long-term effects of that are. And, you know, and from what I've been seeing over my 18 plus years is that it's, you know, incomplete healing or subadequate. You know, it's something that we really need to start respecting and paying attention to. And again, our body knows what it's doing. You know, there's millions of years of evolution behind it. It's not a mistake. It's not something that needs managed. You know, when we get an injury, there's a reason we have the response we have. It's not like a guess. You know, our body responds to the amount of damage it has, and it responds correctly. Now, again, you're going to have those outliers that, you know, you may have some sort of autoimmune problem or something like that, but our body knows what it's doing, and it knows it far better than we, you know, profess to know. There's so much still out there that we don't really understand about the immune process and all of that, and the healing process as a whole. And just trying to manipulate one little portion of it because we think inflammation's bad or we think we need to manage the swelling, just not a smart idea.
Yeah, I agree, Brendan. And, you know, when you mentioned the Mark Pro, of course, one of our sort of themes on the show here, when we look at pushing human performance to the next level, I think, you know, on the physical side, we're really getting a grasp of it. And this is just a classic example of us getting a good understanding of the physical adaptations to the stress we put on the body, and injury recovery, injury management is no different. Technology, though, is going to be something that really allows us to move forward. And technology in forms of equipment, and I'm talking about clothing, shoes, bats, balls, rackets, the technology out there is just going to another level. But technology that's allowing us to understand and work with the body in ways we just haven't been able before. On the psychology side and the brain side, we're seeing all the bio-neural feedback that we're doing now. But on when we talk about this, the Mark Pro is a piece of technology that's just allowing us to do things that we know are just right. And I, again, you mentioned it earlier, how much you guys like and use the Mark Pro. I love this because it makes sense and it actually works within the realm of the body's natural processes. I really like it. How do you guys use the Mark Pro?
Exactly. You're exactly right. In the majority of the stuff we use it for is injuries. So you know, ankle sprains, knee sprains, those kind of things, shoulder problems. You know, if I've got, you know, for instance, my last ACL, I went all the way with it. So when we see an injury, we had a tennis player that sprained his ACL, and we went from day one. So as soon as he came in with the injury, you know, we saw him within actually hours of the injury. Mark Pro goes on right away to start facilitating that blood flow, lymphatic flow, because the damage is done. So now your body's responding to that. So what we do is use that. And one of the best ways to get lymphatic flow and blood flow is through muscle contraction. Now, this is it's a non-fatiguing muscle contraction. So in other words, I could use it pretty much all day long and not feel any effects from like muscle fatigue or anything like that. So I could use it right before I played basketball or whatever sport I'm doing. But we use that right away. And our protocol for that is we're using it as much as possible. So that means, you know, I always tell our athletes a minimum 4 to 6 hours in one sitting. Now, use it as much as you want. We have some athletes that sleep with it. But we'll go from that and then, you know, therapy, stuff like that. Because not only does the Mark Pro help, you know, in that healing process as far as managing, or not managing, but facilitating inflammation, movement, and lymphatic flow, all those things, and getting us through that whole healing process. But it also staves off any muscle atrophy that we commonly see with ACL injuries or ankle injuries or things like that. You know, the body has a tendency to shut down certain muscles in response to those injuries as a protective measure. But what we're also seeing is that, like I said, we're getting a lot less atrophy with that. So right after surgery, so this is the first time I did this, I asked our doc to not use any ice. So normally what happens with an ACL injury is they'll go for surgery and then the doc will put some kind of, you know, ice compression on them, then wrap them up, and then, you know, they're supposed to use that over the next couple of days. What I had him do was, and he was very willing to do it, I asked him to put a couple of the electrodes on the calf and the quad and hooked the athlete up who was very familiar with the Mark Pro, and he used that instead. So that was his rehab. His compression. So I saw him the very next day, and I was pretty impressed with what happened, because I wasn't expecting much. I was expecting, yeah, you were going to see some, you know, less swelling, things like that, but his quad set was absolutely fantastic, and it was right from the first time. Normally, it takes, you know, a few days to get a really good quad set. Straight leg raises usually take a while, and it's a struggle, and it's painful.
Yep.
This kid was, from the moment I said something, it was so fast, I didn't even have I wanted to video it. I didn't even have the video ready, because it was just, boom, he was doing it. And his straight leg raise, boom. Doing it, no problems, nothing. He looked like he had been doing rehab for about 3 to 4 weeks.
So huge,
it was that good.
Yeah,
yeah. And from that point now, it just I keep wanting to go forward and pushing a little bit more and a little bit more. But you know, the problem with that was, you know, we've had with our ACLs is that they're doing so well, but there's a certain point where the ACL just needs time to kind of, you know, attach and really heal and get stronger. And there's a point in there where that ACL is a little weak. So we can't really push beyond that because we're still respecting that graft to heal up. So and at that point, I don't know, maybe the graft was fairly well healed because we're kind of moving that whole process along, but I couldn't say for sure. So
yeah.
We're having the problem of we got an athlete feeling great, moving fantastic, and we got to hold you back a little bit, you know. So that's been our biggest problem is dealing with that kind of thing. But after seeing those results, I just, you know, I cannot imagine ever going back to using ice.
Yeah, no question. And hey, those are great problems to have. That is athlete management at its very, very finest. We talk about it on a daily basis, but coming back from an injury, so, so critical. And that's that relationship building, right? But it'll be interesting to see, you know, in a few years when we start getting some hard data. I know for a fact, Brandon, that the recovery times from small injuries like contusions right up to the major surgeries or reconstructions, we're going to be able to impact the return time. But I like what you said there about being cautious of when you're feeling good. And we say this to our athletes all the time. The days you're feeling good, please follow the protocol, right? Just follow the protocol, because those are the days you want to step over that line because you feel like it, right?
Right.
Great stuff, Brandon. Well, hey, good luck to you guys. I really appreciate the conversation today. It's an important conversation right now, Brandon, because the entire world of sport, you know, we look what's happening in minor sport, for example, the dropout rates, the specializations leading to overuse injuries that we're seeing that we've never really experienced before. So this understanding of maybe how to better manage and assess and deal with the recovery from injuries, hopefully maybe we could put a shift in the injuries at the developmental level and at the more serious level, college and professional. Hopefully we can keep our athletes healthier longer and help them return to play quicker so they can keep chasing down their dreams.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's the thing. You know, we're seeing, you know, most of the stuff that we used to be seeing here was attritional stuff. You know, it's stuff that it can be helped, it can be prevented. It you know, it doesn't have to be that way. And I think we've found a better way to do what we're supposed to be doing, and that's, you know, helping our athletes recover from injury and stay recovered.
Excellent, Brandon. Well, listen, we're going to be watching you guys with interest, man. Good luck. I know the athletes will be back here soon, full-fledged, so good luck with everything. Thanks so much for your information today, Brandon. Really, really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
There you go. That's one great conversation as we look at the movement away from using ice in terms of injury management and recovery. It's a really, really important move right now in sport, and it's something that I think we want all coaches, parents, and athletes to be thinking about. So really, really good conversation there. I want to thank Brandon for that. We're constantly looking for ways to improve our athletes' performance, and this is just one of those situations. We listen to the science. We've modified our warm-up and preparation strategies. We've gotten away from that static stretch that we all did as kids to more dynamic, sport-specific movement type warm-ups and preparation periods to get our bodies ready for sport. We've advanced our approach on nutrition and biochemistry. We've really focused on sleep, and now we're moving in a new direction when it comes to injury management, recovery, and return to play. We're no longer using ice. We know that it slows recovery and healing from competition, from training, and most certainly from injury. Bottom line is, if you want to perform better, you need to recover better. When you're not fully recovered, performance suffers. You're not in the state of readiness you need to be in to get to the next training session or the next competition, and that's where you slowly break down. And over time, that overuse and fatigue often leads to the injuries that we're seeing. So in our quest to help our athletes improve their performance, through our research, we found the Mark Pro. Most of the professional baseball pitchers are using it right now. A lot of athletes in football are using it. Virtually every single sport. We see it all over college sport right now. Hey, we're using the Mark Pro. Our athletes are using the Mark Pro. You can too. If you're interested, go to markpro.com and use the promo code CRUSHSP. I love it so much. I want it for everybody because this is something that works. It's an act we can get behind. Let's put it that way. And so we'd like to have it for you as well. Go there, use the promo code CRUSHSP, K-R-U-S-H-S-P, and they'll help you out there for sure. Hey, we have to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little more baseball. Is anybody as worried about baseball as I am right now? There's a lot of big things going on in the game, and they're not all good. We'll talk about it right after this. Stick around, everyone.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everybody. Jeff Kershaw here. This week, we are talking baseball as we just cross over the midway point of the Major League Baseball season. The All-Star Game right around the corner. There's a lot to talk about in the game of baseball and a lot to learn as well. Just had a great conversation talking about the ice-free training room. We have to thank Brendan Aiken for that conversation right there. There's a very important trend going on when it comes to managing injuries and recovery for athletes, and it's not ice. It's been such an ingrained part of sport that we really need to start rethinking, and we have. Honestly, we got to move away from it. If you want the advantage, you have to rethink the use of ice when it comes to injuries and recovery in sport. Great conversation right there. And it goes back to a conversation we had a few months ago with Gary Reinl talking about his book called The Meltdown, and how the new science and research is just showing us that ice slows recovery and is not great for managing injuries. So a new age, and we continue to progress in the world of sport. If you want to get in touch with us, do so. Crush Performance is the website. We're on Twitter at Jeff Crush and in all other media platforms, social media platforms. Just search out Crush Performance. If you have a question, comment, or smart remark, please get to us. We answer every single question we get. And if you have a question or something you want us to investigate or look into, let us know. We may dedicate a segment or an entire episode to your idea. So do get to us. Back to baseball. Well, at the start of every single season, I lay out my teams, players, and hot stories to watch. And if we go back to the start of this year, I'll give you the list of teams that I felt were worthy of our attention, regardless of whether we're fans of these teams or not. Just interesting storylines, not necessarily because they're going to do well, but maybe just because something interesting is going on inside that organization. Well, in the American League East, the Yankees were my number one team to watch. One, because they really cut payroll. They made some interesting player moves. They let go of Joe Girardi, one of the most successful managers in recent baseball history, to hire a rookie manager for this incredible young team, which I thought was a crazy move at the time. But maybe Brian Cashman, their GM, is more genius than we first thought he was, because it turned out that that was a pretty good move based on how they're performing right now. And not only that, with the cut in payroll, Cashman really set that team up to be a triple threat in Major League Baseball. And though they started a little slow, they're everything we thought they were going to be and then some. Scary as all get up, and the Yankees were the team to watch in the East. In the Central, Cleveland Indians, for obvious reasons. Great young team, sort of middle of the pack payroll. We're really looking at them to do some special things this year, but a lot of great young players. And some urgency. They haven't won a World Series in 70 years. So the pressure's on in Cleveland, but they're really, really doing well with that young team that they put together. In the West, of course, the Astros are the team to watch, and they certainly have lived up to all expectations. Their starters have been great. They've just been playing solid baseball. For the wild card, I had the Angels in Boston. The Angels have just fallen off the table. Boston's right there with the largest payroll in all of baseball. They're doing, well, what they're supposed to be doing, winning. The Yankees are giving them a run for the money. The AL East is going to be the one to watch there. In the National League, this is where the real interesting stuff has been happening, because if you look at the standings, the American League is almost set in terms of the postseason here at the All-Star break, but in the National League, there's a lot of great battles going on. The East is a three-team battle. The Central is a three-team battle. And virtually in the West, every single team, except for maybe the Padres, have a shot at doing something special there. So the National League is where all the action is. You know, there's talk that they might go to the designated hitter. I hope they don't. I really don't. It changes the game so much. And I kind of like having the two leagues, and we can compare them, having, you know, the pitcher hitting in the National League, having the designated hitter in the American League. It's a very, very different game for that very reason. And I hope they don't go with a designated hitter in the National League, because I like the way things are lining up. In the East, I have the Nationals doing really well this year, but they're not there. They're 5.5 games back sort of at the All-Star break, and they're definitely in the hunt, but they're not as strong as I thought they were going to be. I'm hoping that they had a good season hanging on to Bryce Harper, They're one of the seven franchises without a World Series, so I'm hoping they do well. In the Central, I'm watching the Cubs to chase down and repeat, but you can't ignore Milwaukee there either because they were a big surprise last year. They were leading that division at the All-Star break last year by 5 games. This year, they're ahead by 1.5. The Cubs right behind them. St. Louis is in the hunt as well. Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, well, they've fallen off, and I think they're out of it. In the West, I have the Dodgers. And the Dodgers started really slow. They had me nervous, but they're coming back. The Dodgers are just too good. They're too deep to not be there. Arizona is ahead of schedule. I had Arizona and the Giants battling for the wild card. Now, this is where it gets interesting because if we look at payrolls and the biggest bang for the buck this year, which is something we do every year, in Major League Baseball for 2018 at the All-Star break, the number one team getting the biggest bang for their buck is once again the Brewers. The Brewers last year were, I think, a bottom three team in terms of payroll. This year, they're 26, so they're right there again with $106 million in payroll. They're up 1.5 games in that brutal NL Central. They're doing really well. So in terms of the investment and the amount of money ownership is paying, listen, they've definitely got the biggest bang for their buck in Major League Baseball at the midseason point once again, second year in a row. Number two this year goes to the A's in my book. The A's have the lowest payroll in Major League Baseball at $82.8 million, and they are in the hunt. They're doing really, really well in the American League West. They're 9 games back, but boy, oh boy, they went on a streak there of 24 out of 25 or 23 out of 25 games. They're a team to watch in the second half. Do they have the depth and the talent to really make a bang in the second half? I'm not sure, but listen, those guys are playing like they've got nothing to lose. Kind of reminds me of the Las Vegas Knights in the NHL. Those guys were just playing with nothing to lose. There was no expectations. Oakland might be the same. I'm kind of interested to see if they make a move, maybe add a few pieces going into the second half. They're 9 games back and they are hot, really hot. They're a team to watch in the future as well. Number three, the Braves. Listen, the Braves were my number one team to watch this year overall. The number one team to watch because of what's going on in that organization. Of course, with all the controversy and shadiness that went on, their GM was fired and banned from baseball. Alex Anthopoulos comes in to save the day. And let me tell you right now, they're doing a great job. The Braves are 21 in Major League Baseball payroll out of 30. They're 21 at $28.2 million. They have maybe the deepest farm system in the entire game. And I'm telling you right now, they're looking really, really good. Number four on our list is Cleveland. They are 16th overall in terms of payroll at $154 million. They lead the AL Central by 8.5 games. They're a lock for the postseason. And of course, number five, the Houston Astros. They are 12th overall in payroll, $166 million. Defending champions, doing exactly what they should be doing. Number five on the biggest bang for the buck at the half. Boston has the highest payroll in Major League Baseball at $235.8 million. The San Francisco Giants just behind them at $224.9 million. A lot of great stories there. And we are out of time. We've got to get going here. Coming up next week on the show, we will recap the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game. We're going to break down the second half. We're going to look at some of the interesting trends in Major League Baseball. Strikeouts, hits, home runs, and the 100-mile-an-hour fastball. And on that note, we're also going to visit with one of the most successful baseball development programs on the planet, the Florida Baseball Ranch. All that and more coming up next week on Crush Performance. I want to thank Brendan Aiken for joining us today. I want to thank you for tuning in. Now get out there, get better, and we'll talk to you next week on Crush Performance.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to write.
This is an MMA report with Jason Floyd, Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
The UFC should break out an interim featherweight title for UFC 227.
Ooh, I know who wants it. Brian Ortega. He's been calling for maybe something like that. And it feels nice to wrap a title around your waist, Jason. But I am selling this. Should? If the question is should, I'm selling this. If the question is would, I think they will because they have an infatuation with title belts. But by God, the interim title needs to be laid to rest.
Would you dare say the UFC has a fetish for interim titles?
I think somewhere. you know.
I mean, like,
I'm not saying Dana White's into being a part of like a dominatrix or whatever, but like nothing turns him on more than getting hit. Like he likes getting hit with the belt, but he likes getting hit with interim belts more. You know what I'm saying? You know,
I mean, and then I guess the question then becomes is it Frankie Edgar? Is it Jeremy Stevens? And then what happened? You know, then, you know, I guess, you know, in terms of the interim title, I guess the question's got to be is what's the future for Max Holloway? And the other thing is Max Holloway's days at 155 pounds over? In terms of this question, I'm selling it, and primarily because we have too many goddamn interim titles as it is.
I feel bad. I want to see a mockumentary style video on the guy who has to make all the interim titles for the UFC, the overworked poor guy.
The MMA Report with Jason Floyd can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.